them out.
Keep rolling, 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 though the streams are swollen. Keep them doggies rolling, roaring through rain and wind and weather. Hell bent for leather, wishing my gal was by my side. All the things I'm missing, good fiddles, love and kissing, are waiting at the end of my ride. Move them on, hit them up, hit them up. Move them on, hit them up, raw high.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Burt Reynolds and Charles Bronson podcast. I am your host, Scott White, and I am joined by a first-time guest. Please introduce yourself, young man.
Yes, I'm Aaron from Front Row Negative, one of the co-hosts for that show. I'm excited to be here. I've talked about this because the name alone for this podcast is interesting, and just the name alone entertains me. So, and the funny thing enough is that today I was at a convention earlier. I saw a Charles Bronson shirt that was hilarious because it was set up as Charles in Charge with Charles Bronson holding a gun. So
that means you were at the Houston Horror Convention that was happening this weekend.
That's where I was at. Me and
yes.
My co-host went to that today. We attended that this morning.
I picked an episode of Rawhide. That's what we're reviewing today. From 1965, Duel at Daybreak. And it's the only time, I believe, that Charles Bronson and Clint Eastwood have shared the screen together in any project.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, like looking back on it and like seeing who was in it at the like Clint Eastwood and Charles Bronson, this is like the Western version of Return of the Dragon. We have Bruce Lee on one side and Chuck Norris on the other side. Yeah, two like basically gun icons across from each other. And I was really surprised. So
you mentioned before that you've never seen an episode of Rawhide. I've never seen an episode of Rawhide. So we're both watching Rawhide for the first time. And the only thing I know about Rawhide is the theme song. And the only reason I know the theme song is because of the Blues Brothers.
I only know Rawhide from the theme song, I think because it was an Ace Ventura movie where he was singing the Rawhide song as part of a joke. So that's the only reason I know the Rawhide song was because of Ace Ventura or one of the Ace Ventura movies. And yeah, I've never seen it. I've had grandparents talk about this. That's how old it is. Grandparents talk about this show, never seen it. And even the intro for the intro, like the song and everything, I was like, wow, this is truly epic. Just how timeless it is.
So Rawhide started in the 50s, started in 59, went to 65. This is the last season. We're watching episode 10 from season 8, the last season of Rawhide, because by this point, I believe Clint Eastwood made at least one of those spaghetti westerns, the Man with No Name trilogy, and he was on his way out of television and into making movies.
Yeah, I do believe so. So yeah, this was a great way to start. My first introduction to Rawhide was this episode with who's in it.
Are you a Clint Eastwood fan and or a Charles Bronson fan?
Okay, so in my college years, Charles Bronson all the way. I've watched all the Death Wish movies, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yeah, 5. I bought the Death Wish movie multi-pack. Then I bought another Charles Bronson movie pack, which had like Minutes to Midnight, a few of the other ones that he did. I own all of those. Within the last 3 years, I've gotten into Clint Eastwood movies, like the Westerns, like, you know, all the Dirty Harry movies, the, you know, Pale Rider, all his Unforgiven, all of his Western movies. So back in college, up until a few years ago, I would say Charles Bronson. Now more of Clint Eastwood. That's kind of that's why I made the analogy of Return of the Dragon, where he had Bruce Lee versus Chuck Norris, because for me, that's the same thing for this episode.
So let's just start off and you just jump in whenever you feel like it. The movie starts off where Clint Eastwood, he plays a cowboy, and his job, he brings cattle in for these rich landowners. He moves these cattle from one place to another. And he's hired by a guy in the episode called Mason Woodruff. Mason Woodruff has hired Clint Eastwood and his guys to move cattle. So Mason Woodruff's main guy is Charles Bronson.
Mm-hmm.
And his name was Del Lingman.
Lingman. Just Lingman. Lingman. Go get Lingman.
The episode starts off where Woodruff's daughter comes in. She is attracted, or actually one of Clint Eastwood guys is attracted to her, a guy named Roman. So those two have a little moment. Charles Bronson sees this, and evidently Charles Bronson is really jealous of what just happened. Because Roman starts walking, and there's this giant puddle in the middle of the ground, and there's these two giant planks on it. And he starts walking across these planks, and Charles Bronson, like typical Charles Bronson, is like, "This is my bridge, get off." And he's just really, really intimidating.
He's very, I'll say, jealous. First of all, we have to describe the landscape of this thing. This is a ranch, right? This is a ranch. Yep. This place is flooded. There's water everywhere. It's like it's underwater. It's under sea level. It's like part of Atlantis. Like, where is this cowboy ranch at?
Yeah, maybe they just had a thunderstorm or something. Because you're right, the whole place is flooded. And this is really what starts things in motion. Like, she pulls up in her cart, and she parks in this giant puddle. It's like, you couldn't find anywhere else to park? She parks in this giant puddle. And Roman, so he sees that she's in this puddle. He picks her up. He carries her to the front door. Charles Bronson sees all this, gets pissed off. And that's what starts everything. The fact that she just parked in a puddle.
If she would have moved 10 feet forward, this would have all been fine. This would have been a great deal. This would have been a great bargain or a transaction. But her, she probably lives in Seattle. This is probably a cowboy ranch in Seattle somewhere with all the water and rain. Has to park in the giant puddle and have planks put down for her to get across.
Yeah, there's planks everywhere covering these mud holes. And this is what happens. So Roman starts walking across this mud hole on these two planks. And Charles Bronson is like, get off my bridge. And he picks one of the planks up and he starts moving it around. And then Roman sort of like stomps down hard on the plank and it splashes mud all up, all over Bronson. Now it's on.
Let's see, back in those days, that's what you would call stepping on somebody's Jordans back in those days, you know, the 50s.
Charles Bronson starts shooting at him, but Roman doesn't have a gun, and they're going to toss him. Have you ever seen the movie Shane, the Western Shane?
I've seen it before. It's been a long time since I've watched it.
There's a scene in that movie that reminds me what's happening here. A stagehand throws the gun to Roman, and Charles Bronson is like, pick it up, pick it up. And there's an exact same scene in Shane where it's Jack Palance telling a guy to pick up a gun. So once we hear a couple of gunshots and then all the Rich Ranchers guys come running out and all the Clint Eastwood guys come running out. And I just want to say something. It's at this point in the show, one of Clint Eastwood's ranch hands is a black man. And it's played by the actor, Raymond St. Jacques. I hope I'm pronouncing it that correct. And he plays a guy called Simon. And he has a pretty dominant role in the series and in this episode. And it was just refreshing to see a black man in 50s and 60s television being a strong black man. There's the point in the scene where all these white guys are telling him to back off. And he's like, you know what? If you think I'm going to back off and let you shoot this kid, you are wrong. And it was just refreshing to see that. And I was actually shocked to see that in this episode.
I was too, but at the same time, before watching this movie, I've seen Blazing Saddles. To me, it was just like, okay, that's a great character. That's a great character. And I when we get to that part, his move, perfect. It fits.
Which saves the day. We're going to get to that. While all this is happening, like Woodruff and Clint Eastwood show up, and there's a couple of words exchanged. The very minimal words exchanged between Eastwood and Bronson at this point.
What's going on here?
That's the big man here. Del?
I'm teaching a wet behind the ears kid a lesson in manners.
That's enough.
Nope. He still has it coming.
Only you're doing all the shooting.
Well, he's got a gun now. All he has to do is pick it up.
What'd he do? Putting a high price on a pair of pants, aren't you?
Maybe you'd like to pay for them.
any time, mister.
Dell! Was it done deliberately?
Deliberate enough.
Gun's been nicked a few times, probably blow up in your face.
Just let him be. He ain't gonna get the chance to pull that trigger.
Mr. Woodruff, get him out of here.
Dell!
And then Woodruff tells Bronson to get lost and everybody disperses. And at this point, Clint Eastwood wants to back out of the deal. He doesn't like the way things are going down. And Woodruff convinces him. It's just like, it's only going to be a couple of days. We can keep these two apart. And he eventually talks Clint into taking his cattle where they need to go.
Yeah. Yeah, basically, like I think they said they're in the middle of doing the headcount for the cattle. And to break a deal away like this during the middle of the deal is not professional. So that's why Eastwood agrees to stay for that, basically to finish the deal, to finish it off.
Right, because the owner pulls this, you gave me your word, and back then, you know, your word was your bond, and Clint Eastwood didn't want to break his word, so he's like, you know, against my better judgment, we're going to do this, and we're just going to keep these two, we're going to keep a Roman and Dell, we're just going to keep them apart as best we can, and just get the job done. And then we go inside the mansion, and we see the daughter, and what's the daughter's name again?
She had a Vicky? Is it Vicky?
Yeah, that's right. It's Vicky. So Vicky and her dad are talking, and Vicky wants to go back to Savannah. She doesn't feel right out here in the West, wherever they're at. And the dad's like, no, this is our home now. We're not going back to Savannah. And it seems pretty innocuous at the time, the statement that he just made, but later in the episode, it's going to become very important.
This is where it gets kind of confusing, because at the beginning of the episode, you could tell that she's got some kind of interest in Roman. But then on this part, she acts like she has no interest in Roman at all. But then it comes back again where she does have interest. So it's really weird, the dynamic with her wanting to save, you know, prevent the fighting and everything.
Yeah, it's noble to want to save a human life, but you're right, it's very ambivalent. One time, you know, at this point she likes him, at this point she doesn't like him, another point she does like him again. So it just seems like she's going to, and this is, of course, television and movie love, where people meet, and once they meet, they are immediately in love, and they immediately have to do everything for each other, which doesn't happen in real life. But yeah, just for just meeting this guy, the length she takes, and she is going to take, to protect him from Charles Bronson, from, you know, Bronson gunning him down, is just really to the extreme. Because we find out that, yeah, Bronson is really interested in Vicky. When you see them on, you know, in this episode, Bronson is much, much older than Vicky.
Yeah. I mean, that him carrying her from her carriage to the house, yeah, that was a long drive for him. Probably took him about 10 minutes to make that caravan of carrying her. But still, that's only 10 minutes of them being together.
So we go back to Clint Eastwood's camp. And and his character in the TV show is, Rowdy Yates. So we go back to Rowdy's camp. And his right-hand man is a guy called Jed. Jed sees Roman off in the distance. And he walks over there and he starts to talk to him. And then he realizes that Roman has been humiliated in public in front of Vicky by Charles Bronson, and that he's going to do something about it. And he's trying to stop him. He's trying to talk him out of it, because Roman does not carry a gun, so he's not proficient with a gun. And we've been led to believe that Charles Bronson is really proficient with a gun.
Yes. Yes. This would be the training montage part of it.
And we do get a bit of that later. But the thing is, so Jed's talking to him about Dell, the guy who wants to kill him. And Roman keeps asking about Woodruff. And Jed's a bit confused. It's like, don't be worried about Woodruff. Be worried about the guy that wants to gun you down. He's like, why are you worried about Woodruff? And he's like, yeah, I've got my reasons. Or he says something like that. And then he turns to Jed and he's like, I want to carry a gun. I want a gun. And Jed's like, no, no, I'm not going to get you a gun. And then he's like, well, then I'll just get one myself.
I said he wants that gun license, and all he had to do was just ask.
So once Jed realizes that Roman is going to get a gun and take matters into his own hands, Jed actually takes matters into his own hands. And he goes to the ranch, and he wants to confront Bronson. So he goes there, and he starts firing a gun. He's asking around for Dell. Bronson finally comes out, like, I hear you're looking for a guy named Dell. That's me. And now Jed and Bronson are going to get into it. And then once again, Clint Eastwood and Woodruff come running out, you know, to stop this. Well, Woodruff stops Bronson, and Clint Eastwood stops his guy, Jed.
Yeah. Well, the funny thing is that Jed wanted to do this on his horse. So he wanted to do a drive-by shooting on his horse while Bronson was still on his feet, which was funny. It was just funny, just like some of the things that, like this part, because again, he shows up on a horse. I'm like, okay, he's going to get off and he's going to puff out his chest. No, he stays on the horse and he kind of anchors himself up to be able to grab his gun from the side on the horse. And I'm like, you know, whoever misses is going to get kicked by the horse no matter what. So that doesn't make sense.
Okay, I'll admit this. I know nothing about horses and I know nothing about guns, but I think I can safely say that if you fire a gun on a horse, that horse is going to buck.
Unless the horse is specifically trained to deal with loud noises, that is true. My grandmother did have a ranch and a farm, and so I did have the comfort of growing up around horses that during the summers and stuff like that. And unless you train them to deal with loud noises, they'll be fine. But watching that horse was like shifting every time somebody walked up next to it. So that horse is kind of intimidated already. I can only imagine they fire a gun, that thing's going to start jumping and kicking everybody and anybody in that area. It would probably kick Bronson so hard if the other guy misses that Bronson's stash would come out. Because we didn't, I don't think we prefaced this. This is a show or an episode where Bronson does not have his iconic mustache. This is pre-stash Bronson. So he looks just like an angry, angry guy. If you thought he looked angry before, he looked even angrier this time. It's like, this is like disappointing dad angry without that mustache.
The one thing I really liked about this episode is all the actors are riding their horses. That's Clint Eastwood riding his horse down the side of the mountain. And those are all his stagehands. Those actors are all riding horses. It lends a lot of authenticity to the show and to the scenes when you can actually see the actor on the horse. Not a lot of stunt doubles here. And there's a scene later where Charles Bronson is on a horse, but we don't really see him right away on the horse. It's sort of shot in shadow, and I'm not really sure if Bronson can ride a horse. What am I talking about? I've seen him in Westerns. Okay, yeah, he's played Indians and cowboys in a ton of Westerns, and I've seen him on a horse. So obviously Charles Bronson knows how to ride a horse. I'm going to retract that stupid-ass statement that he doesn't know how to ride a horse.
He probably can. He can. I mean, I wonder if they had to get a step stool for him to get up on there, because he's not a tall man.
He's not a tall man. And if you notice, okay, one of the things that I was disappointed in this episode is there's no really meaty scenes between Eastwood and Bronson. It's all between Bronson and Roman. They're in scenes together, but they don't have any really meaningful dialogue together. They never really talk to each other together. And whenever they're in a scene together, it's usually, for the most part, only a real wide shot. Because I believe Bronson is like 5'9", and Eastwood is like 6'4".
Yeah, there definitely would have been a size, definitely a Rock Kevin Hart discrepancy between both of them.
So once again, they diffused the situation. And something I liked about this episode is, when you think of Clint Eastwood, you just think of all of his movies and everything he's been in, you think of this is a guy that wants to solve problems with a gun. But in this episode, he does everything he can to solve these problems without a gun, without violence. He wants to talk it out. He wants everything to be peaceful, which really goes against all you pretty much know about Clint Eastwood.
He wants to solve this without using violence or a gun, which is very opposite of how people know Clint Eastwood in his films. But for Charles Bronson, this is the typical another Bronson cameo with the way the gun and everything that he's used to, especially if you've seen the Death Wish movies.
So the next scene, it's Clint Eastwood and his right-hand man, Jed, and Roman all having dinner with the Woodruffs, with the father and the daughter. that are up at the house having dinner. And then we cut to what might be my favorite scene in the episode is Charles Bronson's in his room and he's eating. And the stagehand comes in and he's like, hey, you know that kid Roman, he's up at the house eating.
Yeah. Hi, Del. I didn't think you'd be here, but I saw your light on.
Where would I be?
Well, there's some kind of a party going on at the big house.
So?
So, I thought maybe you'd be up there.
Get your foot off that chair.
There are three horses tied up out in front.
I saw them.
They belong to Yates, Colby, and that kid.
You got something on your mind, say it.
Well, I figure with that kid being at that party with Vicky and all,
Get your foot off that chair. Get out.
I was gonna say, the way he frames it is that he's like, everybody's at the house eating except for you. Like, instigating it with, like, even all the ranch hands are at the house eating except for you. When in reality, it's just Eastwood, Roman, and Jed, and you have Woodruff and his daughter, and that's it.
Yeah, and that ranch hand, he's like real weaselly. He's just like, he's just like, yeah, they got kids up there. You gotta get... He's just real weaselly. He's just looking to get somebody shot. He doesn't even care. He just wants to see a gun duel.
It's a boring day at the ranch. He needs some entertainment.
And he keeps putting his foot up on this chair, and Charles Bronson, without even looking at him, just through his peripheral vision, is just like, get your foot off that chair. He does it again. I told you to get your foot off that chair.
I caught that because I think in one of the Death Wish movies, he says something similar to that with, like, you know, don't put your feet on the table. Like, in one of the movies, he's doing that as well. That same kind of line, or that same kind of intimidation correction for his furniture. So that was a good throwback in that future movie that he does with that kind of context.
So he tells the guy to get out, and he's still eating. And I'm watching this scene, and I'm like, he's going to flip that table. Well, guess what? He doesn't flip that table. He picks that table up, and he throws that table all the way across the room, and it just smashes against the wall. I was not expecting that.
He does. I hope that was a kiddie table, because, yeah, the way he picked it up and chunked it is like that bowl might have had spinach in it for him to be able to level it like that.
And then the next scene, he does something really, really subtle, which I really, really enjoyed. He walks over to the mirror, and he puts on some aftershave lotion, because he knows he's going up to the house. He's going to confront Roman. But he knows she's going to be there. And he knows that even though that, you know, he's this rough and tumble gunfighter, that he wants to smell good for her. He wants to look good for her. And if he wants to woo her, he has to be some sort of a gentleman while in her presence.
Going back to the dinner, like while they're at the dinner, you know, you get a little bit more background, because before the dinner, you kind of have a feeling that something's off with Woodruff, you know, the hint of something being there. And at the dinner, Roman is pushing for information on something. Either he knows something, or he's trying to get Woodruff to admit to something at the dinner that they're at, which is, he's sort of being subtle about it, but the way Eastwood's squinting at him at that moment, you know that he's not being too subtle about it. Eastwood has his regular, he has three modes of squints. He has his regular squint. He has his squint intrigued, where he arches an eyebrow. Then he has a really angry squint where he starts grinding his teeth as he's squinting at you. And he looked over and the eyebrow went up as he's like intrigued with, okay, what's happening? Squint. So just the like you're getting a little background of what they're talking about with Woodruff, because again, this is now shifting from bully situation to there's more to it. There's another problem to it at this dinner. And before anything could start to happen, that's whenever Bronson shows up after shaving everything.
So at this point, Clint is like, we're going to go and him and Jed and Roman, they all get up and leave. And I said, for the most part, Bronson and Eastwood are filmed apart, but there's a scene where Bronson is standing there and Eastwood walks right past him, and I believe he had to be on an apple box or something, Bronson did, because when Eastwood walks past him, they're almost the same height. I mean, he had to be standing on something for that to happen, unless Eastwood was slouching or something, you know, just humping forward while he was walking.
Yeah, I think he was standing on like an apple box or something to have a semi-equal height to Eastwood for that.
So all three of them leave, and Eastwood and Jed and Roman are outside. Eastwood just wants to get out of there, but Roman's like, no, I'm going to stick around, and I'm going to challenge Charles Bronson when he comes out of the house. Because he couldn't challenge him while he was in the house, because even though this is the rough and tumble West, you still had the Southern rules. You never challenge a man in another man's house. So even though this is the rough and tumble West, you still have the prim and proper rules that you have to follow to be a gentleman in the West.
Hey, gladiator rules. Gladiator rules. Someone's got to go.
Right. Now we see a change in Woodruff. Because up to this time, he has been preventing Bronson from killing this kid. But now Woodruff knows that this kid knows something about him that he can't allow to get out.
He mentions the newspaper during dinner.
Because they both grew up in Savannah, Georgia. Savannah, North Carolina. North Carolina. And his daughter is like, well, maybe you knew my father. And Roman's like, he's being cagey. He's like, I didn't know your father, but I think I saw his picture in the paper. And she's like, oh, your picture's in the paper, Dad. And the dad's like, once he hears all this, the dad just goes white as a sheet. He knows something is up. Oh, and by the way, okay, so here's something. And also, the Old West stuff here. Like, during the meal, the daughter speaks out of turn, and when she does, the father is like, yes, basically he said, you should not talk while the men are talking.
Yeah, that old trope, shut up, woman.
Yeah, and bringing it up, it's not that it's fine, but it's like, that's the way it was during that time frame. That was just the rules. That's how things were. It was wrong, but that's how things were. So even though it is very, very misogynistic, That's what was going on during those times.
Yes, I mean this was years before The Quick and the Dead, before Lady Rawhide the movie. You know, all those strong women westerns that have come since then.
What was that all western movie with Drew Barrymore and Andie MacDowell?
Oh, I can't. I know what you're talking about. I remember it because they try to make Drew Barrymore like the sexy young eye candy piece for that movie,
right?
But yeah, but all I see is the little girl from ET walking around in a cowboy hat. Yeah, I know what you're talking about. I can't think of the name of it. I would have to look it up. I'm trying to remember, because I remember seeing, when I worked at Blockbuster, I remember seeing it. And Bad Girls. Yeah, Bad Girls. So yeah, I remember seeing the box art for that one when I worked at Blockbuster all the time. And I always laughed because, again, they tried to make Drew Barrymore the eye candy for that movie. And all I kept seeing is the goofy-looking little girl from E.T. So she was out of place for me.
Bronson comes out, and Roman challenges him to a duel. And at this point, up until now, Woodruff has been, you guys shouldn't have a duel. But now Woodruff is like, you know what? You guys should have a duel. And the daughter's all confused. The daughter's like, what's going on?
He definitely is. And so, isn't this the part where, they take Roman back for the training montage?
Yeah, it's going to be a duel at daybreak, because Bronson wants it now, but the Woodruff is like, no, give him 2 days. They're like giving him a day to use, you know, learn how to fire a gun.
Yeah, because he's never really fired one before.
He's like, yeah, I fired a gun before. And they're like, yeah, maybe at rabbits or gophers, but you've never fired a gun at somebody firing back at you.
It's like when a kid goes to driver's ed. Hey, kid, you ever driven a car before? Yeah, I have. I've played Need for Speed. I've played Cruising USA. Same thing for this kid. Yeah, I've shot a gun before. Sure.
And now we get the shooting montage where all these bottles and rocks are on a ledge and, you know, he's shooting them and he's hitting them. He's got good aim. But the thing is, it's like he's really, really slow. he's not quick drawing and shooting these bottles and rocks. He's like standing there and aiming and cocking the gun. He's really, really slow shooting all these items.
He's literally standing there and aiming, like straight up standing there aiming. And this is where I kind of went back and rewatched the beginning again with, you know, the intro of Charles Bronson, because Bronson, when he's shooting straight from his hip. And he's straight up straight shooting from his hip, like quick, just quick action shooting. And I'm like, oh, okay. So this kid is slow because he's got to bring it up, aim, fire. Bronson's just sliding it out, pop up, shoot. So big difference.
And Bronson has the reputation of being a quick gun and a killer. He's got that reputation in the West.
Yes, he does.
So Jed's there, and Simon is there. And they're teaching him how to shoot. And at one point, Jed's like, give me your gun. So Roman gives him his gun. And once he gives him his gun, he just punches him in the face and he falls on the ground. And Roman's like, why'd you do that? He's like, you never give up your gun.
Well, how's that? Well, you shoot as good as any man I've ever seen.
But not good enough.
It was dead center.
But the target wasn't shooting back. You'd have been down 3 seconds before you fired.
Kid, you're ready for lesson number two. Let me have that gun.
What was that for?
That's lesson number two.
This gun is your life, kid. Never give it to anyone, not even your mother.
Thanks. I'll remember that.
You don't give up your gun. And they insult him like something like, by the time you get off one shot, Dell or Lingdon has already emptied his full clip. So they're just berating him at this point with his skill set, what he's not able to do.
So then Simon says to Jed, you know what we should do? We should teach him the trick we did in Kansas City. Jed throws the gun out in front of Simon. Simon dives for the gun, picks up the gun, and then shoots the targets. And then they do the same thing for Roman, and he does the same thing, but he is much slower than Simon. So they realize even if we do that, he's really too slow right now. Then we cut to Clint Eastwood, and he's talking to a couple of guys, and they're telling him that he has to stop this. And he's like, I don't know, how can I stop this? And they basically compare Roman to an animal. They're like, well, what you got to do is you just pin him down and tie him down. And Clint Eastwood's like, you really can't compare a man to an animal because you don't know what's inside a man. Basically, what Eastwood is saying is, if I tied him up, I would have to tie him up forever. Because the minute I let him go, he has it in his head that he's going to get even with Bronson. He's going to go do that.
Because they're comparing Lingdon to a wild dog, a wild rabbit dog. They keep saying that he's like an unchecked wild rabbit dog, that he's Woodruff's mad dog. Basically, he handles his problems. He's Woodruff's problem solver.
Right. He's like the wolf from Pulp Fiction. Yeah, he takes care of problems. And Charles Bronson actually brings it up to Woodruff later in the episode. He says that. So Eastwood once again goes back to Woodruff and asks him to stop him. You know, asks him to stop Bronson, I should say. Woodruff won't do it because Woodruff at this point knows that he needs to get rid of this kid. And the only way to get rid of this kid is to let Bronson shoot him.
Yes. And then we cut to, I think, what was it? The kid can't sleep the night before, or this is the...
Well, before that. So after Eastwood leaves, the daughter comes in and starts talking to her dad. And she can tell there's a change in him. She doesn't know what's going on. The dad starts yelling at her. And he tells her to go to her room. Go to your room. And she leaves. And at this point, she doesn't go to her room. She goes to Charles Bronson's room. And she asks him, what can I do to keep you from killing Roman? And Bronson looks at her and he's like, I want you.
Yeah, pretty much. He wants her to go with him to basically run away together.
Right.
And he won't kill the kid. Roman will live if she leaves with him. In the middle of the night, they have to leave.
At first she says no, but then Bronson says something like, do you really want that kid to die? And she realizes that this is the only way to save Roman, so she eventually agrees.
Yes. Yeah, that's what she agrees to do. Well, yeah, she agrees to it. And I think this is what leads into the scene where the father's up. He's still up at night.
But first, we go to the scene where the kid can't sleep. he's with, you know, he's with his friends there in the camp, and one of them starts reading from the Bible.
His last rites, because they all know the kid isn't going to win. They all have the feeling he's not going to win.
Yeah, they're basically saying, kid, you're too slow. You may be accurate, but you're just way too slow with your gun. So now we go back to the scene where the father can't sleep. And the father, he hears something, and he goes out, and he catches Vicky, who says she can't sleep.
Well, he catches her walking by because she's wearing a big old dress that she, you can tell she's hiding something behind her dress. And then when they're talking and, you know, finally the father reveals everything. He spills everything to her.
But first, so he sees the bag and he looks out the window and he sees Bronson there and he gets angry. He's like, how long have you two been carrying on behind my back? And she is just like stunned. She's like, we haven't been carrying on. Since you won't save Roman, I have to go away with him to save Roman. And then the father realizes what's going on, and that's when he spills the beans about everything, about who he is, about who they are. Apparently, back in Savannah, he was working as a clerk for this guy.
Not just any clerk. He was sent to school. The people he worked for took care of him. They sent him to school. They paid him well. They really took care of him.
Yeah, he said, I betrayed the man who made me or schooled me or something like that. Just the way he phrased it was just really, really heart-wrenching. What was the thing that was happening in Savannah? What started the whole thing?
He joined in with the carpetbaggers to basically rob, kill, and betray his boss or his superior on that. He joined in with them instead of fighting alongside his boss. He joined the angry mob to loot and rob. So wasn't a good thing.
No, and that's why his name was in the paper. That's where Roman recognized him from, being labeled as a carpetbagger that stole from his boss. His daughter's like, why did you do this? And she's like, I did it for, you know, and he's like, I did it for you. And she's like, I didn't want all this. And that, at this point, they agree, okay, I'm going to go back to Savannah and I'm going to face whatever I need to face for the crimes that I've done. And he goes outside to confront Bronson.
You won't need that extra horse.
Just like that, huh?
In the morning, you draw your back pay and get out.
All these years doing your dirty work, and now I'm just another hand.
Much worse than that.
You owe me something, Woodruff.
Mr. Woodruff.
Never mind all that. I know what you are.
All right. Then maybe you ought to know it's all over. We're not going to do anything to that boy.
That's not the way I see it.
No?
I got a share in all this, Woodruff. About a one-half share. And I still intend to be part of the family.
Get out of here! Get out!
He'll be all right. I'm going to settle with that kid. Whatever he knows is too much. And if anybody's going to put you in jail, it'll be me. And I'll be back for you.
Very Yellowstone rip-ish. This guy was his rip from Yellowstone, with doing all the dirty work, all the cleanup for Woodruff.
So at this point, Bronson just shoots Woodruff in the shoulder, and he goes down in the puddle because there's just puddles everywhere at this place. He goes down in a puddle, and his daughter runs up to him and starts comforting him. And he's like, I'm going to go. Bronson's like, I'm going to go take care of Roman. And when I come back, I'm coming back for you. And he points to Vicky, and then he rides away.
Yes, yes. Yeah, he's going to come back to take Vicky along with him, because, yeah, he's basically out. He's going to essentially do to him what Woodruff did to his previous boss. So,
oh, you know what? You're right. I never thought of it that way. But, yeah, you're absolutely right. He's doing to him what he did to his previous boss. We're back at camp, and Roman can't sleep, and Jed's still trying to talk him out of doing this duel. And then Bronson sneaks up on him. And I was a bit disappointing, that Clint Eastwood is nowhere near this third scene, or this final act. really disappointed that he was not involved in this final act. It's Jed and Roman and Bronson, and Bronson sneaks up on him. You know, we're going to do this now. And Jed's like, Roman doesn't have a gun. Throw your gun to him like he did before. And now the KC thing comes into play because Jed throws the gun out in front of Roman, just like they practiced. And Bronson sees this, and Bronson sort of rolls his eyes. But then he puts his gun back in his holster because he's going to do it right. If he's going to kill this guy, he's going to do it right. Tells him to go for the gun, and Roman dives for the gun, and he gets the gun, and he shoots, and Bronson shoots. So there's shooting going on between the both of them. And you see that Roman gets hit. He rolls over, and you don't know how bad he's hit. And Bronson is standing there for a while, and then he has one of the most awkward death scenes I've ever seen on film.
Well, you know, Bronson has, I guess this is why Bronson's character, or his every movie he's been in, he's never died. Any of the movies that he's been in, because he doesn't know how to do a death scene. He doesn't know how to do it. But yeah, it was really weird because I thought, okay, I see they're showcasing his hand, but then they go back to him and he just looks down, but you don't see anything. There's no, like, you know, stain. There's no entry wound. Nothing. But all you see is you see Roman, and he's on the ground hurting, and you know he's, you know, groaning and stuff. But with Bronson, you don't see anything until he. You wouldn't know until you saw him fall down, which was very different. And this is probably why he's never had a death scene since, because of that. He doesn't know how to do it.
So Jed checks Roman, and Roman's okay. He's been hit. He's bleeding, but he's okay. And then Simon checks Bronson, and he's like, he's dead.
Yeah, he gave the most Simpson-esque ever answer. This man is dead. And then looks up at everybody else, the most Dr. Hibbert style response to anything.
So now we have the epilogue, which I found a bit confusing. It's so Eastwood is in front of Woodruff and his daughter, and he's going to go back to Savannah and face the charges. But they still have to get his cattle to wherever the cattle needs to go. But I'm thinking, is it still, since he's not who he says he is, and since he gained this cattle through illegal means, is it still his cattle? I don't know. I was a bit confused about this ending right here.
It's really weird it's weird how they're trying to explain it. Basically, this is him atoning for his past, but still keeping his future because it's a happy ending. It's really weird how they're doing it because he doesn't really, he's not paying any repercussions for what he did in this past, but he's still kind of keeping his payment for the cattle that he's buying for sale and all that. He's still doing all of that. So it's really, it's weird. it's just weird.
Yeah. It's a weird ending. It's like, I'm going to turn myself in, but I still need my cattle, which I have obtained through, you know, less than just ways to get to where they need to get going. And it was just a really forced ending. And Roman leaves with Clint Eastwood. I was surprised that he didn't stay with Vicky.
Yeah, you would think so, especially since you just said that you looked into the cast and he's not a
regular. Yeah.
I mean, you would think that, you know, since the father's going to go back to Savannah to, you know, take care of his past, that Roman would stay with Vicky to kind of take over the farm to keep things going.
And Roman's like, they're very forgiving. And Savannah, you know what? This guy murdered somebody. In fact, this guy probably murdered a lot of people. So I don't know how forgiving Savannah's going to be with mass murder.
Yeah, it's like, oh, you know, he's happy, but I'm going to go back and, you know, clear things up. You killed somebody. You helped people kill somebody. You stole his stuff. You looted his house. What are you going to do?
It was pretty much a typical Hollywood, quote unquote, happy ending. Best they could with the circumstances that they had. And that was the Rawhide episode, A Duel at Daybreak.
I was disappointed with the title. Instead of A Duel at Daybreak, this should have been A Duel of the Squints. Because you got Clint Eastwood on one side with his squints. And if you've ever seen the Charles Bronson movie, he squints a lot too. The title card should have been Duel of the Squints, just to have both, like, shots of their eyes on opposite ends of the screen, just looking at, just squinting at each other, just to set up the episode.
That's what disappointed me most about this episode, is that it wasn't a duel between Clint Eastwood and Charles Bronson. That would have been epic. The two squinters squinting at Dawn. But we get it between Bronson and Roman, and Roman has sort of a Hamlet quality to him. Should I do this? Should I not do this? Now, I will say I did love Charles Bronson in this. He played the badass to a T.
And just like all of his movies since, he wore all black. Everything he's in, he wears all black. I think the only exception was that either in Death Wish 4 or 5, where he wore like a plaid shirt for like one scene. But other than that, he wears all black.
Oh my God, in Death Wish 3, that ending battle where he's wearing a black turtleneck, black jeans, and a black leather jacket, he could not have looked cooler. I mean, I know he's like 75 in that movie, however old he was, but he had the mustache and the gray hair and the black outfit. He just could not have looked cooler.
Hey, Death Wish 3 had one of the best gunfight scenes.
I have done a podcast on Death Wish 3, and I have gone on record that Death Wish 3 might be the greatest movie ever made.
I would agree with you on that. It's one of the top best ones ever made. Just the gunfight at the end makes that entire movie. It makes the entire movie.
Yeah, so when you get done listening to this podcast, go back and listen to my Death Wish 3 podcast. All in all, yeah, this was an enjoyable episode. It was typical 1960s Western television. I mean, it was great to see the epic, broad, black and white. I enjoyed seeing it all in black and white. The horses, Clint Eastwood riding a horse. I enjoyed seeing Charles Bronson as the badass. It was just pretty much just a really enjoyable episode.
It definitely was. What got me was this with this episode, Rawhide, and just, I guess, I don't know if they do this with every episode, but you start off with one storyline, and it quickly shifts into something else. It's like current TV where you start off with one storytelling or one plot point, and then midway through you get a completely different twist, which changes the whole ending or changes the whole outlook of the episode or the show. And I really didn't realize Rawhide way back then did that. I didn't realize that was one of the shows that would kind of have that twist and plot. But it was really well. I enjoyed it. This will probably be my only and last Rawhide episode I'll watch. Because don't they have like, what, 20 seasons of this?
8 seasons. It was on for 8 seasons. You're thinking of Gunsmoke. Gunsmoke was on for 20 seasons. But if you do want to watch Rawhide, it's on YouTube. You can watch them for free. If you want to watch this episode, it was the 10th episode of the 8th season, Duel at Dawn. And that's it. So, Aaron, before we go, what do you want to promote? Where can people find you? Anything you want to promote, now's the chance to do it.
All right. So, Front Row Negative, we have a YouTube channel. We have a podcast on Podbean. You can search us out there. We have an Instagram. We got a Facebook. Twitter, we're still working on the Twitter page, trying to get that set up to where we can kind of shift in and out of accounts. We have a merch store on Redbubble and TeePublic, so if you want to buy one of our logo shirts, you go there. I know I have a few of the other Cross the Streams Media logos and shirt designs up on that as well, because Dwayne didn't pay me, so we just have it on my account. We have those. I am on Instagram at Suicide Fox with 2 X's on there. My co-host Chris is Chris Foreman Artist. He's also on Instagram, so he does a lot of his comic art. He does a lot of his card art. He's always on there as well, if you want to contact him for that. Yeah, and that's pretty much where we're at with Front Row Negative. We're trying to get everywhere, but it's a slow build.
I will get the links from you, and I'll put those links in the description of the podcast.
Okay, thank you so much. That would be great.
All right, that's it. I want to thank Aaron for doing this podcast, and we'll see everybody here next time on the Burt Reynolds and Charles Bronson podcast.
Thank you for having me.
To support this podcast, please go to www.patreon.com/ScottWhite and give what you're able. If you're listening on iTunes, please give a review. This should help people find the podcast when they're searching. No matter what services you use to listen, please leave feedback. We always want to improve. Thank you for listening to the Burt Reynolds and Charles Bronson podcast.
Hey, I've got it. Remember the theme from Rawhide?
Gil Faber, Rowdy Yates.
What key?
Hey, good country key.
Rawhide and A.
This has been a Cross the Streams Media Podcast.